Hey, Prime members, you can listen to America Changed Forever ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
This spring, if you'd rather spend time enjoying your lawn instead of trying to keep it alive, there's good news. TruGreen is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and even some things you might not even think of. They'll do all of it, while you can do literally anything else. With True Green, you can have your lawn looking as good as a putting green. That's not hyperbole. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. True Green offers a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people guaranteed.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
CBS presents America Changed Forever with CBS News correspondent Jeff Pegues.
This week, I sat down with the mother of a man who died after he was pinned to the ground by sheriff's deputies and hospital workers. According to the county prosecutor who is investigating the case, Ivo Otieno died of asphyxiation. Hospital security cameras captured the incident on video.
Surveillance video from inside a Virginia hospital shows Ivo Otieno being dragged into a room by Henrico County Sheriff's deputies at 4:19 p.m. on March 6, his hands and feet shackled. About 8 minutes later, Otieno appears to struggle. The deputies and hospital staff rush over and pin him to the floor. At one point, as many as 10 people are seen pressing down on his body while other hospital staff look on.
There's no pulse anymore.
Is the patient aggressive or is he not?
He used to be aggressive, right? So they're trying to put him in restraint. Then eventually he's no longer breathing.
Roughly 12 minutes later, Otieno's body appears lifeless on the floor. Hospital staff try to resuscitate him, but he's pronounced dead about an hour later.
I sat down with Otieno's mother, Caroline Owoko, and her attorney, Ben Crump. Here's the interview in its entirety. Thank you for your time. Sorry for your loss. Let's talk about your son.
He was my baby. Ivo was my second-born child. His brother Leon and then Ivo. He loved his mother. And I loved him too. He promised me that he was gonna take care of me. So even as a young man, he took that responsibility on his shoulders. We live together here in Richmond. My oldest son is now married and lives in Baltimore. So Ivo was the one home, you know, most of the time. And boy, did he show up. He cut the yard. I didn't have to ask him from a young age. He took care of things around the house. Ivo had big dreams. And he proclaimed it. And he always said, "Mama, I'm gonna be great. I'm gonna be great, Mama. I can't fail. We gonna make it. Me and my brother will make it. We'll take care of you. We'll take care of the family." My husband died about 6 years ago in Kenya. And so Ivo and Leon has other siblings in Kenya, stepsisters and brothers. And even this last Christmas, I was scribbled his monies, and his brother did, you know, and they sent it home, you know. He was separated from Kenya. Of course, now he's American, but he never forgot where he came from. And he was going to work hard and make sure that his brothers and sisters had a better life.
It sounds like he wanted the American dream like everybody else.
Yes, and he believed in it. And this was home for him. And he knew that there would be an opportunity for him as long as he worked hard to get where he wanted to be. But that opportunity was stolen away from him. He was not ready to go. Ivo Otieno loved life. He had friends, great friends around him. He had a community that loved him. I have so many of his high school friends and parents coming to our house, bawling up, crying. Because when they see what happened to my son, they think about their own children. They are scared of what could happen to their own children. And I'm talking diversity. He had diverse friends all across the board. That's who he was. In my family, we welcomed everybody. It was not exclusive to just a certain kind of people. Ivo valued his freedom. His freedom was very important for him. Even in his music, you can hear his lyrics. Equality was important to him. That others were treated fairly and in a dignified manner was important to him. But he was not accorded that. That really breaks my heart.
America is seeing this video. What did you see in that video?
What I saw in that video What I saw is inhumane. I saw these 9 men and a woman on top of my baby, squeezing him every inch of the way. Literally squeezing the life out of him. He was not ready to go. You could see he was still there. But the idea that others were standing and watching and didn't speak up, even including the hospital staff, nobody came through to say this is enough and to stop what was going on. I never imagined that I could live to see anything like that in my life. What they did to my baby is unbelievable. And to me, it looks like that was the plan, because from start to finish, nobody stopped it until they accomplished their mission. Their mission was to kill my son, and they murdered him.
And it's troubling because what Ms. Caroline thinks about is what everybody's thinking about. He was handcuffed, had irons on his ankles, he was face down, and they piled on him. And you're saying, why? He wasn't a threat to himself or anybody else.
No.
When he's that restrained. Mm-hmm. And they had all the weight on him, they got a knee on his neck, and you're saying, this is so unnecessary.
Right.
And they stayed on him for not 1 minute, but over 11 minutes. And I think the prosecutor and the state investigating agencies, when they looked at that, they said, Why would you stay on him that long when he's already restrained?
Listen, and this is going to be tough to hear, but the defense attorneys say that he was resisting.
Where was he resisting?
Struggling. That's what they're saying. Let me have it.
It is so asinine to say a person who has handcuffs and leg irons on, just close the room. Let him stay by himself. You know he's having a mental health crisis, but why is it when you're black and you're having a mental health crisis, it's not treated like a medical issue, it's treated like a criminal issue?
Right.
And what we saw them doing on that video was excessive. Not in trying to help a person who had a health issue, they were treating it like a criminal issue. And it should not be a factor of whether the color of your skin is black and the status of your mental health, whether you live or die when you have a confrontation with the police. President Biden met with the cast of Ted Lasso at the White House talking about the importance of mental health. Well, we would hope that they would engage the conversation about when black people have mental health crisis, that it is too treated like an important medical condition and not a criminal issue, because far too often, when black people have mental health crisis, they become criminal issues that end up with a death sentence. And that's what happened to Ivo.
Any idea, Caroline or Mr. Crump, any idea what triggered this incident? Was he having some sort of mental health crisis?
Yes.
Yes.
He was.
He was in mental health crisis.
Had he had incidents similar to that in the past?
Yes. In the past, when he got into mental distress, he went to the hospital and was taken care of, and he came back home. My question is, why this time he didn't come back home? Why didn't my son come back home?
For other parents watching this, what do you say to them?
I say to them, don't be comfortable, because what happened to my son here can happen to your son. It can happen to your daughter tomorrow. We need to make some changes. I'm mourning the death of my son, and I'm finding myself at the same time, you know, trying to seek justice for him. It's a lot. It's a lot. And what I would say is to every parent out there, call your local officials, talk to them, put pressure, ask for some changes. We need changes. Because this is not just happened to Ivo. It could happen to others tomorrow. And I bet you maybe it's happened in the past. Who knows?
Yes. Many times.
We've got to put a stop to it.
The grand jury indicting the 10 people prosecutors say are involved. How do you feel about the indictments?
That's the first step.
The first step.
I'm glad that they will be indicted. The 9 men and the 1 woman. I'm glad that that has happened. But I would like to see them charged eventually and put behind bars forever, so they are not out here hurting anybody else or murdering anybody else.
You think they deserve a life sentence behind bars?
Ability.
Full accountability, yes. Because to me, these nine men and a woman, they are the real monsters. They are animals. And they should be treated as such. What they did to my son was wrong.
Have you heard the 911 calls?
I have not.
The prosecutor has indicated that there could be more charges to come. It sounds like, I mean, if you listen to the calls, just seem to be delay after delay getting medical personnel to what is essentially a hospital, which, you know, sort of surprised me. And I think from what we hear, they're looking into the potential for more potential charges.
Well, one thing I do know is simply this. Everybody's asking, why did you have to use this type of force on a person who was already restrained at the wrists and the ankles? And you knew it was a mental health issue. This wasn't a criminal matter. Mm-hmm. You knew he needed just help. But yet you used this excessive force. It's so unnecessary. And as Ms. Caroline said, it's inhumane that you would do this to a person face down and restrained. A lot of people are saying, if he was struggling, he was struggling to breathe.
Yes. Yes. And to try to turn things around and to try to paint my son as the villain.
Yeah.
It's heartbreaking.
You think that's what defense attorneys are trying to do?
I see it. I can. I don't have to be, you know, somebody in the legal field to see it. And what I saw in the video, my son was not, he didn't have any life left in him, any fight left in him. When they brought him into that room, they were trying to show him, to sit him on the chair. He couldn't sit, he was sliding off. Eventually, they lowered him to the ground.
One last question. You've covered so many cases similar to this. What, in your view, really stands out about this case?
The fact that this was a mental health crisis where he was in the hospital. That's where you're supposed to get the help. You're not supposed to be killed while you're in the hospital, the mental health hospital. And, you know, we're still analyzing the video. Attorney Mark Crudis and our legal team. But 3 years later, after George Floyd, a police officer should never put the knee. I'm sorry, let me say that correctly. 3 years after George Floyd, why would a police officer ever put their knee on the neck of a restrained individual who's face down?
Right.
Why would they ever do that?
Okay, as a parent, how did you think before you saw that video? Did you think, maybe I don't want to see this? Because it just stays with you. Did you contemplate maybe not watching it?
If Ivo Otieno, my son, went through what he went through, watching the video is the least I can do. I wanted to watch it, and I'm glad it went public, and America saw it, parents saw it, young people saw it, because they needed to see that. Seeing is believing. Mm. I'm glad that video came out. My son's friends are outraged. Young men who went to school with him at Freeman High School, his friends and colleagues, and they are all hurting. Mothers are calling me, fathers are calling me. They are coming to our home. They are heartbroken. It didn't have to end like this. So I'm glad that it became public, and I hope it begins a conversation of how some changes can be made so this does not happen to anybody else's child in distress, or anyone in distress.
The CEO of TikTok was grilled on Capitol Hill this past week. Xu Chu defended his company against accusations that it is gathering data that is exploited by the Chinese government. U.S. officials consider the app, which at this point is being used by millions of Americans, they consider it a national security threat. Here's Nicole Killian.
Shouzi Chu tells the House Energy and Commerce Committee its parent company, ByteDance, which is based in Beijing, is not owned or controlled by the Chinese government. And he outlines a plan to set up a new firewall to seal off protected U.S. user data from unauthorized foreign access.
We don't want this data in the hands of the Chinese Communist Party, period.
Chu's testimony comes amid bipartisan calls to restrict the video sharing platform or ban it altogether. In December, ByteDance admitted that employees access the data of American TikTok users, including journalists and some of their contacts. President Biden signed a law banning the app on government devices over spying concerns and has called on ByteDance to divest from TikTok to avoid a U.S. ban. But the company says it doesn't solve the problem.
That was Nicole Killian reporting. Members of Congress grill TikTok CEO. I want to welcome Robin Kaplan to the program. She is a visiting fellow at Duke Sanford School of Public Policy and a founding member of the Platform Governance Research Network. Robin, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
All right, so based on what you've seen, how did the TikTok CEO do under congressional scrutiny?
It's difficult to tell at this stage. The questions that were asked of the CEO, a lot of it made certain presumptions about data flows that were difficult for the CEO to contradict because they made existing assumptions about what data was going where that just is very difficult to fight back against if it's already being assumed in the question. I think he was really good at explaining what sorts of protections the company has been putting in place, what they have been doing to try and implement Project Texas, which I think there are a lot of mixed feelings about. And he was really good at explaining the kinds of controls that the app already uses to control, for instance, what younger users see on their platform.
What is Project Texas? What is that?
So Project Texas is something that TikTok has been trying to implement that contains a lot of different activities that TikTok would take to create more security and transparency around TikTok's data flows and its algorithm. So the move would basically move officially all of TikTok's U.S. user data onto Oracle servers, and it's called Project Texas because Oracle is based in Texas. And it would also give a lot of oversight into algorithms that the company uses as well.
All right. And so what do you think? Is TikTok a threat to national security?
I think that's a very big question. It's one that, you know, as far as I can tell, as a researcher that's been looking at a lot of the research on data flows on TikTok in this space, you know, there is nothing to suggest that TikTok collects more data than any of the other US apps. There's no evidence to demonstrate that they have provided data to the Chinese government. There have been, you know, some questions that have been raised by whistleblowers that haven't really been confirmed or disproven as well about who has access to data at the company. So I think that it's all, you know, should be subject to a thorough investigation. But as of right now, I think the question should be more on data privacy in general, about what rules should be applying to all of these companies across the board, and less really specifically to TikTok's relationship with China, because that's just something we really don't have enough evidence to prove on really either side.
Well, and you touched on this. Don't most social media apps gather information on its customers?
Yes, all of them do. All of them. So, you know, there are every single app you use on your phone on your computer is collecting data about you. They're collecting data about things like your IP address. They're collecting data about what you're searching for, what you are clicking on, how much time you are spending on certain videos or certain posts, whether you're clicking away from a post, and then you're coming back and doing things like commenting. That's something, that's a type of data that Facebook collects in particular. They also know things about, you know, who is around you, because they can tell, they're also collecting data about the IP addresses of people who are within the same area as you and who your phone is communicating with. And they are collecting data about your friends and family and how you are connected within your searches. So yes, we are giving out an enormous amount of data every single day on every single app that we use.
That said, I suspect that the government is looking at TikTok in a different manner because of its alleged relationship, if you will, with the Chinese government, the Communist Party.
Yes. So that is definitely why they are interested in TikTok. Again, like that's not something that I can answer. I don't have any special information about what TikTok's relationship is with the Chinese government. All I can say is that if we're concerned from a position of data privacy, all of the data that is available on TikTok can be gained through a myriad other ways. It is all available for sale. And there are virtually no restrictions on how that data can be bought and sold. I think the question that is being, you know, brought up by academics working in this space and members of the privacy community is, you know, what is solved by a ban on TikTok? Is this like trying to kind of pin or is this like trying to plug a giant ocean with a pin needle? Because it is such a kind of small, very tiny way of addressing a much bigger problem that might not be addressed at all by this ban.
Where do you think this is going to end up? Is the writing on the wall, is this the beginning of the end for TikTok here in the U.S.?
I hope not. And I hope not because I'm like a fan of TikTok, though I am. I am a user of TikTok. But I hope not, because this is virtually unprecedented. The U.S. has never banned an app before. That is something that a country like China would do. We have a different approach to freedom of expression than China has, and it is not an action that we have taken here before. So I hope that before we take an extreme action like that, there is a lot of evidence that can be shown to the American people as to why this action is being taken, and that there are some sort of boundaries about when and how we are taking similar types of actions to ban apps in the future.
How should parents of teenagers who are on this app, how should they react to what they're hearing, not only from members of Congress, but also from the TikTok CEO?
So, I mean, I will say, like, it's difficult for me to comment on that for a few reasons. The first is that, you know, when I am hearing the types of regulations that TikTok has put forward, those are well above what the industry standards are for the types of protections that are given towards younger users. I would really hope that all of these companies start implementing those types of changes, making sure that there are no advertisements, making sure that people under a certain age are default on privacy, giving users the ability to do things like reset algorithms. Those are all things that have been really advocated for years, and it should be industry standard. The other big question is that, you know, yes, parents are concerned, teens are spending a lot of time on this app. And parents might not always have really great visibility into what they're watching. One thing I will say, I'm not certain if this will make parents feel better or worse, but you know, this is a concern we have had with every new media era that we have ever had. It goes back to the move from oral communication to written communication, as articulated within Plato's The Phaedrus. We've had these same concerns emerge over the telegraph, with you know, the emergence of the printed press and the printing press and more cheaply available books. We had these concerns with broadcast radio. We had these concerns with television as well. So what I will say is I think it's really important to keep a lot of these concerns within perspective, while at the same time taking a really active role in your child's life, asking them questions about what they're viewing on these apps, and making sure that they are aware of the amount of data that they are putting out into the world when they interact with technology.
Let's listen to more of the TikTok CEO's testimony on Capitol Hill.
Any ByteDance employees in China, including engineers, currently have access to U.S. data?
Congressman, I would appreciate this. This is a complex topic. Today, all data is stored by default.
It's not that complex.
Congresswoman, I have seen no evidence that the Chinese government has access to that data. They have never asked us. We have not provided.
Well, you know what? I find that actually preposterous.
Why, if you had nothing to hide, would you need to downplay the association with ByteDance in China?
Congresswoman, I have not seen this memo.
During that testimony, Secretary of State Antony Blinken was asked if he supports a ban on TikTok.
Let me just say, as a preliminary matter, when it comes to TikTok, going back to July of 2021, the State Department prohibited the use on our devices of TikTok.
Thank you.
We prohibited embassy contractors, third-party vendors from using it to create or manage accounts. And we've been coordinating with partners across the board on data security policies to make sure that they're aware of this problem. As to the larger question, look, my understanding is that what has been proposed, more than proposed, insisted on, is the divestment of TikTok of the by the parent company. And whether that answers the mail is beyond my my capacity to evaluate. But clearly, we, the administration, and others are seized with the challenge that it poses and are taking action to address it.
Well, you say the challenge it poses. Is it a threat to the United States security?
I believe that it is, yes.
And shouldn't a threat to United States security be banned? They do it to us. Why don't we do it to them?
It should be ended one way or another, and there are different ways of doing that.
That's a very clear answer. I appreciate that very much.
I'm joined once again by Robin Kaplan. Are you surprised by the popularity of TikTok and how it is sort of ascended in the ranks of top social media apps over the years?
Honestly, I am surprised because it took a little bit for this app to gain popularity. And it was really the COVID-19 pandemic that did it. A lot of people were stuck at home. TikTok has, and there's been a lot of conversation about how easy the TikTok app is to do things like share and duet and stitch content. And that's not really true. There's actually a really big barrier to access with TikTok. You have to do a lot of learning on the app to figure out how to make these apps, to figure out how to edit videos. And people are really enormously creative on it. So that took time. And it really was the COVID-19 pandemic that did that. People were suddenly at home with a lot of time on their hands. And some people did invest it in learning skills about how to create videos on TikTok.
According to a CBS News YouGov poll, foreign influence on U.S. via social media was the question. 48% of Americans say that they are very concerned about foreign influence on social media. What is your response to that?
I think it's a big concern. We've been talking about it a lot for the last few years, and we haven't been talking about it solely in relation to TikTok. We've been talking about it in relation to to Facebook in particular, and the influence that foreign governments have had in inserting propaganda into these networks. So I think it's totally justified. These are global communication platforms that everyone really has access to. And I think they are introducing really new concerns about information flows across borders. So yes, I think that, you know, it is a topic of conversation that has been really well worn, particularly within media over the last couple of years.
I just don't understand how the government can now potentially move to ban TikTok when so many Americans are using TikTok already in a way that the damage has already been done.
Yeah, so that's what, you know, there were some documents that came out about India's ban. India banned TikTok, I think, back in 2020. And there were some documents that came out that showed that all of the data on those users that had been on the app before 2020 was still available to TikTok. So to some degree, yes, you know, 150 million Americans are on TikTok. That data has already been provided to the company. But like I said, you know, this is like putting a pin needle within the ocean. That data, that same data, is being bought and sold by countless other companies and apps that you are interacting with daily online. So this is not a TikTok problem. This is a data privacy problem writ large. TikTok in its form in the US has been banned within China. For the majority of countries, though, it's not a ban within the country fully. It's been a ban on certain devices. So New Zealand put a ban on particular political representatives having TikTok on their devices. We've been doing that within the US as well, and no military personnel can have TikTok on their devices. And I think that makes sense. There have been, you know, certain revelations that have come out that demonstrate that there have been employees at TikTok. There's no evidence that this information has gone back to the Chinese government or has left TikTok, the company. But there was some evidence that showed that these employees were able to track individual journalists. So to that extent, that feels like a completely proportional response, that you'll have these high profile individuals. And there is a security concern with those particular high profile individuals.
Based on what you've seen of the hearing, what do you think was an important moment during that hearing?
I think that there wasn't a particularly important moment of the hearing. You heard a lot of the same repeat questions being asked again and again. But what was more notable, I'd say, about the hearing is, you know, that regardless of what your opinion is on what TikTok needs to change, there was pretty significant bipartisan support. So that is notable. That's very notable these days. Particularly when it comes to tech policy issues.
Robin Kaplan, thanks for your time.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
That is America Change Forever for this week. Thanks to Paul Woody Woodhull and District Productive. Don't forget to check your local listings to see when ACF airs in your community. For now, I'm Jeff Begays, and that is how America Change Forever.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to America Change Forever ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
The Hargan women seemed to have it all.
We were blessed. My mom was amazing.
But detectives would soon discover
inside the house there were the bodies of two women.
A story of betrayal you would struggle to believe if it wasn't true.
I am just praying to God. This is a sick joke.
From 48 Hours, this is Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings. Listen to Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings early and ad-free starting May 1st with a 48 Hours Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and host of the Money Watch podcast. This is the show where your money is not scary. It is a show that's all about you. It's your questions that make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money, and maybe more importantly, on your life. Follow Money Watch wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free on the Amazon Music or Wondery app.